You sit at a clean 35-35. 500 on the year. You're flat. And it's been more down than up, to say the least. Hasn't been easy. Hasn't been a great time. Hasn't been moving directly your way. But that's all right. Because you still got time before the deadline. You have a ways to go, right? And we're somewhere between the good and the bad. But you have to figure out what you are by July 31st. And I think that's the difficult part of what we're looking at right now. I think that's really where we stand. Because, hey, guys, I want to be optimistic. And I want to say that this team can still make a run and still go for it. But a lot of the factors that point to this team being able to flip things around and get to a more competitive spot by the time that the important part of the year rolls around, by the time that you get to the end of the season, saying we're in the mix and we're in the wild card, and you know what, we're still a playoff team despite our struggles, it's looking more bleak than it would be looking up. Because we're going to lay out some of the things here as to how it can get better. But when I talk about we're in the middle, I thought that we heard two things over the last 2 days that really show sort of both ends of the spectrum. And I think both of these things are true, which is truthfully, like, hey, down the middle radio is never a perfect thing, right? You never want to be the unopinionated person. I don't like to live on the edge. I like to live, like, on the fence, one side on either side or one leg on either side. But I think this is one of the areas where it's tough not to. I lean towards them having to be selling. But for instance, if I were to go the other way, well, all you'd have to do is listen to John Fanta of Fox Sports on earlier today with Afternoon Drive, laying out as to why you can't be calling a Guardian season over.
I find the discourse on them to be absolutely ridiculous. This organization has made 6 postseasons over the last 9 years. And made the American League Championship Series last year, made a World Series 9 years ago. That doesn't apply to this team. I know that. Have I given up on them? Absolutely not. This team has given you far more good than bad. It is wrong to just sit here and say the season is over, it's done with, and if you're giving them the time of day, then why would you? Because they don't spend any money. I'm just tired of it. I know it's the reality of the situation, but here is the reality. They win a lot more than they lose. I believe that Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff have done things mostly the right way, and to sit here and say the season's over and I'm punting, when I know damn well some of you have been downtown for a 3-8 football team to go watch them on a Sunday, it is unfair and it's wrong to say about this baseball team. They've given you a lot more. We got to be a touch more positive at times.
And I think in a lot of ways, like, John is correct, right? We've been negative across the last couple days for the Guardians. Let's not throw away the fact this team's still 35-35, right? Like, the season, you can't just put a close on the books and say right now they're going to be sellers. And by the way, we have not done that. I said they're most likely going to be sellers, which I still believe to be true. They're not sellers quite yet. Like, they still have a time to prove themselves. They have a time to improve in a lot of the areas where they haven't really shown a lot of what they have this year, especially, again, over the past month, 5 weeks, right around that range. They've been real rough. But, like, well, that's true, and I'd love to lean into a lot of what John Fanta said. Yes, the Guardians have shown you year after year a way to continue to be competitive in ways that other franchises in this city and other franchises in baseball, they just do not do. And Antonetti and Chernoff have gone about things the right way while working under a budget that's not under their control, while building a team that is still competitive. They do it all right. But I think that we can also look elsewhere. Zach Meisel of The Athletic on the Selby's Godcast podcast, laying out, I think, part of also what is reality for the Guardians this season.
They make it so hard to talk about them because so many of the flaws are self-inflicted. Or if you don't want to criticize the front office and ownership for maybe not doing more over the offseason or not trading prospects for established big league talent, then we could spend the next 45 minutes talking about their continued failure at developing position player prospects. It's a whole organizational thing. The counter argument to everything I'm saying is that, well, like, they've been a winning team since blah, 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 and they've made the playoffs in this many years. And yeah, that's more aggravating, I think, to people. Because you're shown that, like, you can do enough to get there, but you can't do more. You can't take the next steps. You can't improve yourself organizationally to the level that you don't have to hang your hat on that. Not only are they miserable and struggling, but my God, are they a boring brand of baseball to watch right now.
And I think, again, like, Zach lays out a lot of the things that are also true about this team. Like, I think it is frustrating to watch a team that's consistently in the playoffs but doing nothing with it, that can't develop talent, that doesn't make moves that made this team better, who is just in the ALCS. That's also a frustration. And I think to his end point there, the Guardians are a terrible team to watch right now. If you want an entertainment factor, they don't have that. The offense is putrid. ESPN put out an article today rating the lineups across baseball and sort of ranking them 1 through 30. Guardians fell at 24. You're in the bottom third and almost like bottom sixth of the MLB when it comes to lineup and the excitement that it presents. And they haven't been putting runs across the board. There's a lot of reasons to look at this team and say, you know, they're just not that great to watch. The pitching is far from masterclass. It's good. It's not incredible. There's nothing that presents entertaining baseball. The Guardians in all the facets are average or worse, and have shown that, and their record is actually above in a lot of ways where they should play. But again, this is where I find myself in the middle, because I can look at what John said in an emphatic rant of saying, hey, this team, we should have more faith in them. We should lean into them, having seen what they've done over the years with rosters that, again, probably shouldn't have been that great, but still find success. And they're not done. The season's not over. But also, I can look at what Zach says and say, yeah, you're also right. Like, this team is boring to watch. This team right now does not have a lot to look forward to and not a lot to show improvement this season. I think this schedule also presents a really difficult thing. And where I ask it, 216-474-0092, can the Guardians get over 500 by the deadline? I think we have to look sort of ahead, right? And we're not going to sit here and play the schedule game. But I went through, I broke down the Guardians schedule a little bit, and I have some presenting things that make it a little bit difficult to look at. And I set up the parameters before I knew what they were. So this is not me tweaking it to make it sound more interesting or more compelling one way or another. I set the parameters of going through and looking, okay, let's go through and let's look back on the season. So get your record between teams that are below 500 right now at this point in the season, or teams that are 500 or better. And then we went through and looked at the future of the schedule and said, okay, how many series do you have to play against teams that right now are 500 or better? Okay, and I broke this down. Right now, against teams worse than 500 in baseball, you're sitting at a clean 16-8. It's a good mark. You're beating the teams that you should beat. There's no qualms about that. The problem is, obviously, knowing this is a 500 baseball team, you look at it and say, okay, the teams that are 500 and better, how are you stacking up against the middle of the pack and better in Major League Baseball? You're 19-27. You're beating up on the bad teams and losing to the solid to good teams. What does that tell you about where the Guardians are? It tells you that they're average or below average. And yes, you can also look at it and say, oh my, they've played a lot more games of teams that are 500 or above 500. Then you're looking at teams if they've played below 500. Yes, the schedule also has not been kind to them. They've also gone through some rough stretches. But hey, the reality is that doesn't change. Guys, I went through and looked at every series you play from now on. And again, a lot can change in the baseball world. These stats will shift. But where you stand right now, teams that are 500 or better are 20 of your remaining 30 series. You have 10 series against teams right now that are below 500. It's a difficult spot, not where you want to be. The season does not get much easier. The schedule does not just completely lighten up and get miles and miles better for you. This isn't the Browns where I can look and say, well, that's almost six straight losses to start the year, or six really difficult games where you can expect that probably to lose more than you win right out of the gate. And then it gets a little bit easier. No, this is a schedule that is really tough for them from top to bottom. And that's from playing in a very competitive division right now in the AL Central. While it's top heavy with the Tigers performing really well, the middle of the pack of everybody besides the Chicago White Sox, between the Royals and the Twins, who you still have to play this year multiple times. Those teams are also performing. And they're not these rollover teams that in years past that they could have been. And you just don't have a ton of teams in baseball right now with the way that it's set up who find themselves below 500, find themselves not being competitive, especially in the American League. The Guardians are on the bottom half of it right now. And a lot of the stats say that they would remain there. That's when I say this team is so much closer to becoming a seller than they are a buyer. I think it makes a lot of sense. And when if I look at this team and say, can they get to over 500 by the deadline? Well, 7 of your next 13 series prior to the deadline are also against teams 500 or better. So I struggle to find that way. Unless you change away and completely change the way you've been playing baseball, you're set up to be losing more games than you're winning. So you're going to be probably somewhere close to, if not under 500, if the trends stay on their current path. And that's a team that's selling in baseball right now. That's a team that's not going to be competitive. Obviously, the Guardians have to go out and play. They have to prove or disprove everything that's been said about them to this point before we make a decision. But I'm telling you, the future does not look bleak right now for the 2025 season. And I've laid it out. We've looked at it across the last few days, across the last couple of weeks. I just don't have a ton to be excited for about this team. I don't think the hitting has just obvious areas where they're going to improve from individual players on the roster. I don't think you have a ton of guys sitting in triple A right now outside of Chase DeLauder and CJ Kafis. We're both roadblocked, by the way, if they come up. I don't think that you really have a ton to look forward to in triple A. It's not like you're just flush with prospects and can make a run at the end of the year either. It's a difficult stretch. Again, 216-474-0092. Can the Guardians get over 500 by the deadline? Let's go out to the phones. Let's talk to Mike. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, Jake. How you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good, man. How about you?
I'm hanging in there, you know. Getting ready for a hot, looks like hot next week. We're going in the 90s, man. Get ready.
Yeah, no kidding. I leave for vacation Sunday. And I've been looking, and we're going to Chicago, Detroit. I'm going to watch some of the games, see some of the other ballparks. It's like 100 degrees.
Yeah. Well, that's all right. You know what? It could be the opposite way. You know, a couple. It seems like not too long ago it was 42-degree weekend, right? At night. You know what I mean? So
yeah, no complaints here.
Right. So I'm tending to agree with you. Like I think really what's got to happen now, if you know, basically the next 10, you know, if they could win 8-9 of those games, you know, get hot and change the narrative a little bit right now going into the All-Star break, it's possible we could avoid the sellers. But you know, like the things that we need to do better right now, you're alluding to, you know, I looked at the schedule too, and it's, you're right. Things can change. Teams that are good now and aren't always good to finish the season, but it's a murderer's row at the end. Even, I mean, you look at that last month stretch, it's tough. So I agree with you. And like the things we're not doing well right now, hitting enough, scoring enough, you know, we can't change that quickly. We just can't. So I kind of thought of it this way, too. The reason I really like maybe going that route, if it looks that way, is we haven't done that for a few years. You know, the last, you know, I'd say 5 years, we've been in the mix. You know, we've been slight buyers, you know, not big buyers. We don't, you know, fans always want us to be bigger buyers, and I'm myself included, but it doesn't work out that way usually. But this is something we used to do once in a while when we were, you know, having a mediocre season. We would use it to jumpstart the next year. And because we're middle market, it really is a nice advantage for us. You know, we could possibly take advantage of that. So I'm leaning that way because I'd like to see, you know, Chris and staff take a little shot at that way, because I really do think it's going to be tough to go somewhere this year. You know, getting through Detroit and the Yankees at the end when we don't really have anybody to, you know, hit the ball much out of it's just tough. So I'm leaning your way. You know, we're trending that way, I think, unless they get on a super, super hot streak. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt about it, Mike. We're up against it, but I appreciate you making the call and make it any time. Mike, very sound in talking Guardians there, very solid. But it was just, like, I want to believe in this team to be able to hit the ball and be able to make the resurgence. Guys, I am grasping at anything I can find that tells me they're going to be a better hitting club. And that's how you win games in today's game of baseball. Like, there's some teams that can rely on pitching. In fact, you're going up against one coming up here in a little bit over an hour when you take on the Giants. You're going to be going up against a team that is very flush in pitching and could use a little help at the bat. They're 10 games over 500, but you're not that right now. You have a lot of young arms who are developing and developing nicely. I like Bybee. I like Williams. Slade Ciccone's shown a lot. Luis Ortiz has been more consistent than he ever was in Pittsburgh this year. I just think you might be, by the time the deadline rolls around, more focused on 2026, and that's okay. It's okay to be that slight sellers. You were slight sellers going back into like 2023 when you moved off of Aaron Civale. You can pick up a lot of assets. You can get these guys who are borderline ready. You have a couple of pieces to move off of. You have some prospects that you could probably move off of because God knows you're probably not going to develop them into being prime hitters because you haven't shown me that you're able to do that yet. And you can try to get pieces that, you know, might be on the fringe of being ready to come up. You can lean into some of these younger guys and truthfully see what you have. And I think that's probably where the Guardians are leaning. Again, we'll see how it plays out going through to July 31st. We're going to talk a little bit more Guardians here on the other side because part of the internet and part of social media has gone absolutely wild. Nick ranted about it today. Ken touched on it. We might as well jump in the mix as well. That's coming your way here at about 8:22 on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan. The countdown to Browns training camp and the preseason is on with all eyes on the quarterback competition. Meanwhile, the NBA draft and free agency is right around the corner. Don't miss a minute of The Fan with the latest breaking news during your workday or on the go. Stream us at 923thefan.com or on your phone with the free Odyssey app. Jake Volnick with you guys here on Overtime. Again, Guardians not far away from first pitch. Well, they're trying to get going. And listen, we've been talking, right? We had conversations last night. Could you be potentially looking to move on from guys like Emmanuel Clase? Could you be looking to move on from guys like Stephen Kwan and some of these other key positions and other key players that are really nice for you and pieces you don't want to think about moving off of? Cade Smith, conversation can go on. I told you guys last night, and it remains true. The one guy who is not on that list and is absolutely a no question, you're not trading that guy, is Jose Ramirez. Right? There's buzz on social media. There's people posting it on X, on Reddit. There's people everywhere trying to be basically throwing out the idea that, hey, Guardians could look to move off of Jose Ramirez or Jose Ramirez could be looking to get out of Cleveland. Like, it just, in no way, shape, or form is that reality. You can't even begin to posit the idea that you'd want to, like, and either way, by the way, like that the Guardians would want to move off of Jose or that Jose would want to move on from the Guardians. Like, let's start with the easier of the two. What on earth has Jose ever told you that said, hey, I don't any longer want to be a Cleveland Guardian? Was it the significantly reduced contract that he signed? Did that swing you that way? The absolute hometown discount that you could possibly ask for? Threw that your way in an unbelievable fashion? Like, did that get you there? Because I don't think that it got you anywhere near that. Like, Jose told you I want to be here. He has a no trade clause in his contract. So unless Jose wants to go, he's not going. We can shut down that. And I just never heard Jose talk to any member of the media. I've never heard him come out in a press conference. I've never seen him on social media, mostly because you can't find him on social media. But I just have never seen him come anywhere close to showing dissatisfaction, unhappiness, or anything relating to anything like the sort about being in Cleveland. And you've produced with Jose here. You've gotten Jose to a World Series. You've gotten him to an ALCS. You've gotten him to the playoffs several times, a lot more than a lot of other players in baseball get to say. Jose knows that. We all know that sitting here. Is there frustration with the season that you're having? Sure. And like, I think Nick said it really well, and JP as well, just kind of throwing out there, like, you guys should be upset. Like, Guardians fans, we should be upset. We should be angry. Hey, this season following an ALCS is not the way that a season following an ALCS looks for just about every other team in baseball. A lot of these times, these teams don't come out and look bad, but I'm not saying it's also just the Guardians either. You can look at the Nationals after they won a World Series. You can look at the Rangers after they won a World Series. The Diamondbacks after they made it to a World Series. These aren't teams that went back and just immediately started running it back either. The Guardians overperformed last year, and that's all right. We enjoyed it very much. They made it to an ALCS, and we were happy. But, okay, so we can just fully rule out the idea, which, by the way, rules out a trade with the no-trade clause, of Jose not wanting to be here. Everything he's done is told you he's wanted to. And if you're the Guardians, in what way would you ever want to move on from Jose Ramirez? Like, that's not reality either. We talked yesterday about how it feels like a year that's unsuccessful this year is like burning a year of Jose's career. And very possible, quite literally the best year of Jose Ramirez's career. Guy's hitting 324 right now. That'd be his highest mark if it finished that way. And we're only 70 games in. We got a lot to play. But he's playing out of his mind. He's already stolen 20 bases. He's already hit 13 homers. It's no slouch. He's the best third baseman in baseball right now. And probably one of the best third basemen to ever play the game. He wouldn't have to go far to say when it's all said and done, he's probably going to be in Cooperstown. I think that's probably true. And I don't think it's a stretch of a fact. But even right now, talk about trade value for Jose Ramirez. Sure, I'll let you throw it out there. I'll give you the opportunity. It's not high. Like, it's a lot. You'd get stuff back. When you talk about the production that Jose Ramirez brings as a 32-year-old third baseman compared to what you'd be getting back, it'd be a slew of prospects, and it'd be a bunch of guys who don't make you as competitive as Jose does. You need talent in a lot of spots. You don't do that by getting rid of an all-time Hall of Fame-level player. That's not how you expand the talent and disperse it better. You do it by developing talent. No team has ever gotten better from getting rid of your best player. Like, throw that out the window. Jose's happy here. We're happy with Jose. It's about how do you get a team to be built around Jose, and how do you get all the rest of the money to work? I mean, the contract that he's on is quite literally highway robbery, and it's willing, consensual highway robbery. And he's okay with it because it allows you to build a team around him, and it has allowed you to at least start to build a team around him. Without that discount, Jose'd be playing in L.A. or be playing in New York. But he didn't want to. And I don't imagine that that's changed. I just don't see how that's even a conversation. That shouldn't even be something that we're talking about. I mean, in what world does anybody come out happier from not having Jose Ramirez as a Guardian? Again, he's told you every move that he's made, every possible thing that he said, that he wants to be here. And the Guardians obviously want him here, too. I mean, my God, at the end of the day, you're a 500 baseball team. We're talking about potentially moving on from your bona fide best player at the position. It's not that bad, guys. We're not the Chicago White Sox, okay? It could certainly be worse. We're not the Colorado Rockies. You're not burning a season that bad. You still have a chance to be competitive. Like, we are sniffing the idea of being a seller at the deadline and talking about moving off of Jose. If you don't like that the Guardians don't spend money, just say you don't like that the Guardians don't spend money. None of us do. Nobody's happy with it. It doesn't mean that everybody has to be unhappy with playing in Cleveland, and Cleveland has to be able to, you know, basically have all of their star players not want to be here. Jose doesn't have to be another horror story of Guardian star, Indian star, no longer playing here because money didn't allow it. It's just, you don't have to do that. And the first opportunity to have one of those go your way and not go the way of that conversation, you think you'd run at it. You think you'd be happy with it. But instead, we basically run into the opposite of people jumping at that opportunity. I mean, seriously, an absolutely ridiculous statement. 216-474-0092. We can't seriously be talking about trading Jose Ramirez, right? Let's go to the phones. Rob is in Cleveland. What's going on, Rob?
Hey, Jake. How you doing tonight, bud?
We're doing pretty good, Rob. How are you doing?
Good. Hey, you know, you're throwing together a lot of really fantastic points there, and I can't even entertain it because the Guardians are not going to trade Ramirez because, you know, it's one thing to trade a player in any sport and lose the productivity. With him, they'd be losing the team leader, the guy that hustles, the guy that's a future Hall of Famer, the number one marketing piece in the team, and a guy that is one of the best values per contract dollar in pro sports. So they're not going to trade him. So like you said, like why waste the energy? But I just think it's insulting to Jose and Juan and the other great players on the team because we were three wins away from a World Series. And one thing about the baseball landscape, Jake, is, you know, there's the haves and the have-nots. There's no salary cap. And our ownership chooses not to spend. And, you know, it makes it harder to build a winner when you can't spend money, but it also decreases their margin for error. So when the team goes out and spends $7 million on a washed-up Paul Sewald that's going to throw, like, 15 innings this year with a 6 ERA, and they trade away a 30-home run, 100 RBI guy like Josh Naylor, like, they made the wrong moves because their margin for error is so slim. And that's where I struggle. Like, we've got a couple years of Kwan left before he's worth $18 million a year, and we probably can't sign him. And we're kind of wasting Jose's prime here by not surrounding him with more talent. And, you know, I think they're – and I'm curious to know your opinion. Like, I think they're probably going to trade Class A because reliever success comes and goes in baseball. It's really hard to have a Mariano-like career. You know, you look at the massive deal the Yankees gave Devin Williams, and he's not even the closer. I mean, he's really struggled out of the gate, and he was just as good as Class A the last couple of years. So, like, I feel like because relievers are volatile, if they can get an everyday outfielder with 30 home run upside to hit in the middle of the lineup, they're probably going to trade Emmanuel Class A, because what's the point of having an elite closer on a team that's hovering around 500, right?
Yeah,
especially when you got Kate Smith and Trevor Stephan and this great bullpen and Aaron, you know, like, you can afford to trade a reliever to get an everyday outfielder so we don't have to suffer through outfielders hitting 220 for another 4 months.
Yeah, and don't forget, I mean, Rob, the fact, too, like, Cade Smith sitting right there in your lap, like, he is a closer on a handful, a majority of teams probably right now in Major League Baseball. You just also have Emmanuel Clase, so he's not your closer. Like, you're living in the best of both worlds.
Jake, people don't want to hear it. People don't, I mean, Clase was a stud last year, number three in Cy Young voting. He's fun. He's electric. He got off to a rough start, but, you know, there's 29 other teams in baseball that would love to have Emmanuel Clase right now. And like, people don't want to hear it, but I'm telling you right now, there's like a 70-30 or 80-20 chance that Emmanuel Clase is not going to be here next year. I mean, if you can get value for him and get an everyday player that's young and controllable, Clase's contract has 4 years of control left at like $5 million a year. I mean, he's for the Dodgers, that's pocket change. And they can give us a Pajes or someone to come in the lineup and hit 25, 30 home runs so we don't have to suffer through, you know, Jonathan Rodriguez and, you know, the ghost of Yonesky Noel. It's just like, it's time to make a change, you know?
Yeah, and Rob, I completely agree, and I appreciate the call. I just think, again, into, like, to your point on the haves and have-nots, because obviously that's the way baseball is. It's not changing. Like, there's a reduced margin for error. Guys, there's still a margin for error when you spend money, too. Like, look at the New York Yankees. They have no World Series to show for the last, like, 20 years of success that we call of them spending money. Or the New York Mets spend money over and over again. They don't have a World Series to show for it. Like, you can spend money and still make the wrong decisions. You just sign what you perceive to be better players to bad contracts. Like, that still plays out the same way. But I think Rob made a really good point on Emmanuel Clase. Like, there's a very high likelihood. You probably don't want to trade Kwan. I think that one's a lot harder to move off of. You don't want to trade Clase, but reality would tell you, in the way that your team's built right now, tells you that that's an asset that could definitely be moved. It would hurt, but you could probably move it. Sneak one more call in here. Steve is in Akron. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, I wanted to first start off by saying thanks that we don't have to talk about the Browns quarterback room and what a blank show that is. So thank you. And I don't think people are necessarily saying that we have to trade Jose. We just think that in the future that could possibly come up, and we're ruining a great year. Like, once again, we're in the ALCS, and we do nothing to get better. And it's just... You know, if you're a Tribe fan, it just eats at you. You know, it's like every couple of years we got to get lucky. And I would think that we're sellers on Class A. I hope to hell that Hedges somehow, someone wants his camaraderie in the locker room. And I would think Santana, too, would be gone. Like, we got to get the young kids up to see what do we have. You know, is DeLauder finally healthy? Can we finally see that guy? Etc. down the line. And you can't trade Kwan. He's the only outfielder we've had in 7 or 8 years. So I think he's untouchable along with Jose.
Yeah,
that's all I got. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Steve. I appreciate making the call. We're up against it, so I got to let you go. But I absolutely appreciate it. I mean, I think you can consider Kwan untouchable. I think the contract makes it very difficult. It's whether or not you're going to be able to sign him, which is a conversation they need to have with Kwan and with themselves on whether or not that's doable. But, yeah, I mean, I don't really think you do ever have to trade Clase. I mean, you made some really good points outside of it. Or, excuse me, Jose. I don't think you really ever have to. You never technically had to trade Nick Chubb, which is kind of the equivalent here. Like, Jose embodies the city the same way. Taking the discount does the exact same thing. You don't really ever have to trade Jose. You don't have to sign him to another massive deal, but he hasn't stopped producing. He's 32. He's continuing to play that way. Until he doesn't, you don't have to trade him. You don't have to move him. And even if he does, if you can sign him to a cheaper contract and have him stay playing here, struggle to see a world where Jose's not a usable third baseman. He's too good of a hitter to not be one, unless we're talking very end of the career. And at that point, it's probably just more of a, you're not signing Jose or you're moving him at the end of this contract. And those days are still far away. All right. Let's leave that there. We will talk a little bit more Browns coming up here. As much as Steve enjoyed not talking about it, we still got to talk about it a little bit. Again, Guardians are going to be starting at 9:40. We'll talk a little bit more on them later as well. But Dylan Gabriel, in a conversation I found interesting across the last week, coming your way in 5 minutes on Overtime with Jake Volnick, right here on The Fan. I saw a report out there, and it wasn't necessarily even the report that brought any sort of interest to me, but almost a question that got sparked off of it, right? And this is within the last week, got brought to my attention earlier on today, but the post comes from a few days ago, of Kurt Benkert, okay, former NFL quarterback. He's now in the media and does a bunch of stuff, but it's not even a report. It's really just an opinion thrown out there, and odd one at that, right? So Kurt went to social media on X, and he decided to post out the idea, hey, I wouldn't be shocked to see the Dolphins trade for Browns quarterback Dylan Gabriel by the end of the preseason. I liked him a ton and saw him as an incredible scheme fit with athletic upside, and we're going to take him a few picks later. But then the Browns drafted him, as he says, per source. The Dolphins traded that pick away after Gabriel was no longer available. So I thought this was interesting, right? Because not the fact that the Browns are going to or could trade Dylan Gabriel, because I told you what I think on that. Hey, this report doesn't change my mind at all. And nothing here actually changes with the idea that, oh, well, somebody says that Dylan Gabriel could be traded. I don't think the Browns are trading a rookie, not a guy they used a third-round pick on. But I do think there's a world where we talk about Dylan Gabriel and definitely undersell the value that's clearly there and undersell what the Browns did, because I, for one, was definitely disappointed. I've told you that, you guys, that several times when they drafted Gabriel. We can go back, look at my social media. I was not happy. Okay, he was my ninth quarterback. But the whole bottom line thing here was, okay, well, the Browns clearly saw him as a scheme fit. And they liked him, and they thought to themselves, hey, we got to take this guy in the third round because we want to make sure we have him. Now, a lot of people would tell you, okay, well, Dylan Gabriel wasn't going until the bare minimum, like the fifth round. And there was a chance that he would have went sixth, seventh, even undrafted, had you left it up to that. I think we almost don't give the Browns enough credit on this, or maybe enough leeway is the right way to sort of frame it. Because I think we also live in a world where maybe the reality of what we thought Dylan Gabriel was in this draft and the way that a lot of teams viewed him isn't actually reality. It would be no surprise to me if my quarterback rankings were off and Dylan Gabriel was higher on NFL teams' boards. I mean, Shedeur Sanders is my number one quarterback. That dude went in the fifth round. And I think that's a great selling point to what I'm about to say. Like, you can have your arguments about why Shedeur fell and a bunch of things that go into that conversation. But realistically, Shedeur fell, and the media was dramatically wrong on where Shedeur was going to go. He talked about him going second. They talked about him going ninth, 19th, in the second round to certain teams, and yet round by round continued to fall and slip farther down the board. I just don't think it's crazy to think that, hey, just maybe the rest of the NFL was also wrong on Dylan Gabriel, or the rest of the NFL media was wrong on Dylan Gabriel. Not the NFL, but the media. Like, just because a bunch of people who sat back here and said Shedeur is going to go in the first round or Shedeur is going to go in the second round also said Dylan Gabriel wasn't going to get drafted, I think there might just be a reality where everybody had a bad read on the quarterback spot in the way that the NFL and NFL teams viewed it. Like, I don't know how much I trust Ben Kurt in his report, but I do know one thing. I can look at Dylan Gabriel and look at the Miami Dolphins and go, well, yeah, that scheme fit definitely makes sense. Is there not a reality that we live in where there's at least one other team that was also considering taking Dylan Gabriel at that spot? Because I think the Browns have done a very good job when it comes to draft value. Right? We've seen that. And Andrew Berry specifically. We saw that with JOK. You got JOK in the second round. I've told you guys, I was sitting there looking at the Browns draft and pounding the table with the pick that you took, Greg Newsom. I was pounding the table. Take JOK. Take JOK. That guy's a difference maker. There's obviously medical concerns. He fell. The Browns read the room, said far enough. We'll take him. And that, at least up to this point, had worked out for you. Shedeur Sanders, I think, is another point where you see, okay, well, you know, they liked maybe Dylan Gabriel better, but at some point they said, okay, the fall's far enough. Shedeur Sanders is at value here, and they're willing to make those decisions, willing to make those picks. They don't think a guy is worth the pick that they are taking him at, or they think they can get him later. The Browns are far from perfect in drafting, but I think that's one aspect they've done very good at. They've found their guys and picked the right spots and to where those draft those guys and where those guys are going to go. They don't just make blind decisions on where to draft certain players. This one sure felt like that. But I just think there's, with this report and with just the idea and thinking behind it, guys, maybe Dylan Gabriel was a third-round quarterback to one or several other teams too. Because if not, if you thought he was going to go in the fifth round, you wouldn't draft him in the third. Right? If you thought he was going to go in the fourth round, or you thought he was going to go before the next pick rolled around, sure, maybe draft him. If you thought you were going to be back up on the clock, wouldn't you have thought that there's probably a better chance that Dylan Sampson was gone than if the rest of NFL media was correct on where Dylan Gabriel was? Because the rest of NFL media definitely had Gabriel rated lower than Dylan Sampson. So you would have just taken Sampson at that third pick if you just knew Dylan Gabriel was going to fall. I don't believe in panic picks. It doesn't strike me as something that happens all that often. Unless a team is absolutely dead set on taking a player and gets absolutely shocked. And that is miscalculation and mismanagement by everybody sitting in that room. You can't do that. You have to have your board properly set up and think about multiple players in any spot that you're drafting other than one. You have to be ready for everything else that goes into that. You have to be ready for sort of the unpredictable. I think the Browns are one of those teams that are ready for that. I don't think you make a panic pick. I think Dylan Gabriel is a quarterback that was there, and they at least had fear that another team was going to draft him at some point. And that was a guy that they identified and they wanted on the roster. I still don't like the pick. I still think it's too high for the quarterback and the production he put out. But that's not for me to decide from here on out. That's for Dylan Gabriel and the Browns to prove me wrong and say, no, he actually was worth the third round pick. And they did draft him in the right spot. Maybe he can be a starter. Like, the Dolphins make a hell of a lot of sense for a fit for Dylan Gabriel. Not the exact same offense by any means to Kevin Stefanski being run by Mike McDaniels, but it's definitely an offense that you look at Tua, and Tua succeeds in it, and that is a quarterback that is not a strong-arm quarterback, is undersized, right? A lefty. You have lefty on lefty with Tua and Dylan Gabriel. Everything there says it makes a ton of sense for that to be your fit. I just think they might have read the room. And if Ben Kurt's right, then they did. They read the room on where Dylan Gabriel was going to go and got out in front of it. I'm not just going to throw that random credit the Browns' way where maybe it isn't deserved, but I think this is somewhere where you can is sort of throw the credit to Dylan Gabriel or throw this credit, excuse me, to the Browns on making the pick of Gabriel. Because I think it makes a hell of a lot more sense than reaching two or three rounds to draft a quarterback that nobody else is going to take. the Browns do one thing well, and it's identify value in the draft. They don't always get that player right, not even close. But they draft guys right around where they would be drafted by other teams. They don't make those reaches. You don't see them making Raiders-type reaches with guys like Alex Leatherwood. They don't do that. I think they probably had a better pulse on it than we're willing to give credit. 216-474-0092. Do you believe the Browns read the room on potential competition in the draft for Dylan Gabriel? We'll get to your calls as well. Get a grip. Coming your way in 5 minutes right here on Overtime with Jake Volnick on The Fan.